Now, live from Studio 550, this is The McGraw Show on KTRS.
8:38 here on the Big 550 KTRS. David Stokes is with us, fast becoming one of our favorites here. He's with the Show Me Institute. He's a policy analyst, and he joins us every Monday here at the Big 550 KTRS. Good morning, David Stokes.
Good morning, McGraw.
Some news over the weekend. Richmond Heights TIF is on its last legs, or is it over with? What's going on here?
Well, there's the development proposal in Hadley Township, which has been going on for years and really torn the community apart in some ways.
Right.
But now the Pace Properties has decided that, and I commend Pace for this, they haven't been able to reach an agreement with some of the remaining homeowners. And I'm certainly not wishing that the development didn't go forward. I'm just happy it's not going forward with eminent domain.
Right.
And Pace deserves credit for choosing not to go forward with eminent domain, which they had some authority under the city to do. They're not going to do that, and the people who don't want to sell in that neighborhood are not going to be forced to sell, which is great.
So the people who do not want to sell are basically stymieing this multi-million dollar development because they don't want to sell their homes.
Exactly.
Right.
The development is being stymied, and the Supreme Court, under the Kelo decision out of Connecticut years ago, determined that is a legitimate use for eminent domain to produce more tax revenues than would otherwise be there.
Right.
But I don't think that's a proper use of it just because the court said it's okay. And I'm glad that Pace and the city of Richmond Heights in this case are not going to move forward on eminent domain.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. You wanted me to ask you about the economic boon that Missouri is seeing because the Tigers are headed to the SEC.
Well, it was funny. There's been a couple little minor controversies that have come out of Columbia since the game a week ago, the home game against Georgia. You know, I had heard reports, and perhaps anecdotal, but I heard some comments about so many Georgia fans came, and they just couldn't get a cab. They didn't really know how to get around Columbia, so they're just in Columbia, and they're at the bars and the hotels, and maybe the KU fans who've been coming for years know how to walk from place to place, but none of the Georgia fans could get a cab because Columbia doesn't have that many cabs. And that gets into the whole licensing issue. In just about every city, every large city in America and many small cities, your number of taxi cab licenses are restricted, and they're restricted artificially so that they can't grow, increase or decrease with supply and demand.
Right.
Of course, they should be able to. You should be able to go into the cab business with a base level of a safety inspection and some registration to supply more cabs on short notice when you have high demand, such as when Alabama or Georgia come to Columbia. But you can't do it, and I don't think you're going to be able to, so it might be a problem.
What about hotels and all that stuff? Any problems with that?
Well, the hotel issue was a little different. They had price spikes before the game because demand was so high. And there's nothing wrong with that except that at least one of the hotels, and because I'm only 99% on the name, I'm not going to say it.
Right.
At least one of the hotels tried to charge the higher price to people they'd already agreed with a contract at a lower price previously.
Right.
So while I believe in supply and demand, I more even believe that they have to agree to the contract they entered.
Right.
So they shouldn't have been able to do that, but they should be able to raise prices and are based on higher demand.
Oh, absolutely. Well, doesn't Missouri charge more for certain games than other games?
Missouri
football tickets.
Oh, absolutely.
More. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the Cardinals have started doing that, charging higher prices on Cub games or some popular night games.
And then lower prices when, you know, whoever comes in who's no one who wants to watch.
And it's technology has made this much more easy to do than it would have been a decade or so ago. So it's great that these teams are adapting to the technology and allowing supply and demand to play more of a role.
Also, last week we were talking to you about the car sales tax, which was vetoed by the governor and then was not able to be overridden, correct?
Right. The Republican leadership in the House and Senate did not bring it up for a veto override.
So that's an interesting, I'm shocked that stayed the way it was. Basically, you can explain it better than I can, but I suspect the car dealers are not very happy with Governor Nixon.
I think probably not. And I think a lot of people were scared by the fear of retroactive taxes being applied to the people who bought cars in the past several months under the new rules and suddenly might have been required to pay sort of back taxes. So, and I think that was a legitimate fear, So it's my hope that in the next session they can fix this, they can change the law, remove the retroactive aspect of it to just make it the new law so that you owe the sales tax on cars purchased out of state, mostly in Kansas here.
Right.
This is mostly a Kansas City area issue. And but in the meantime, you won't be penalized for doing buying your car according to the law as it is now.
Yeah, all right. Also, we are what? We're almost 6 weeks out from Election Day. And you wanted to at least bring attention to the different referendums and amendments we will be voting on. Amendment 3, they're going to ask the state of Missouri to change the Constitution, Amendment 3, on how we elect judges in this state. Explain this to us.
Right, and we're going to start a weekly segment talking about the different ballot issues, and I'm excited to do that.
Right.
There's going to be St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and a lot of statewide ones. This is perhaps the biggest of the statewide issues, making a change to how members of the state Supreme Court are selected. They're just going to, and I support the Missouri plan, which is the system of having a panel of people put together, have a commission, pick a panel of judges, and then the governor picks from that panel.
Right.
The system works well on the whole. It's been copied by many states.
Been praised by many states.
It's known as the Missouri plan, and not just in Missouri. It's known as that nationally. So I have not supported some of the more radical changes to how we select judges in the state over in the past few years.
Right.
But this year they came forward with, I think, some small but positive changes, and I do support these changes, where they're going to increase the number of governor selections for this commission from 3 to 4. They're going to make those terms of those commission members apply a little more closely to the governor's own terms so that the governor can have input right away instead of maybe waiting to their second term to get to actually appoint people.
Right.
And they're going to reduce slightly the input of judges on the commission by making the head of the Supreme Court no longer a voting member of the commission. He or she will still be a member of it. They just won't be a voter, as I understand it. So the balance of power will switch a little bit. And I think the balance of power should be on the side of individuals and appointed by the governor who's elected rather than people selected by the Bar Association and lawyers.
Yeah, it's interesting because I guess the idea, and you said it better than anybody, is that if you elect the governor should have a little bit more say in the judges that are appointed. And this doesn't give him full authority. It just gives him a couple of ways to get people on the committee who can then go about their business and then pick whoever they think is a good pool. And then the governor ultimately gets to pick from that pool.
Right. And the attorneys of Missouri still have a lot of say on this commission and the other judicial selection commissions around the state. So we're definitely involving the bar and the lawyers in the process. I think it's a good thing that maybe the balance of powers just switches a little bit to the gubernatorial appointment.
Are there people complaining that, are there ex-governors complaining that this system, they like this system? I mean, has Governor Holden or Governor Blunt chimed in on this idea?
I think I don't know what the past governors have said. I do know that the Bar Association is responding like apoplectically, like we just made the most gigantic change, and all of a sudden we're going to be electing our Supreme Court judges along partisan tickets with votes and campaign donations.
Right.
I think they're overreacting to the change. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't necessarily care what they think, but I think electing judges at the high stakes, at the high level, I think is generally bad policy, and this doesn't do anything close to that. It just makes a little change to how we select them with our system, and I think it's a good change.
Also, we should touch base with you. You are an elector in the state of Missouri for Romney. So if Romney wins the state, you're going to go to Jefferson City and then cast the presidential ballot for Mitt Romney, right?
Correct. I will be able to cast one of Missouri's 10 electoral college votes.
Did you see the story where I think it was the woman in Wisconsin stepped down? She was, like you were, elected as an electoral college voter. She stepped down because she said in good conscience she's a Ron Paul supporter, and if Mitt Romney wins Wisconsin, she can't vote for Mitt Romney, and she was going to vote for Ron Paul, so she decided to step down.
Well, I hadn't seen that, but that's an issue that we've encountered in Missouri. We have a lot of great, dedicated Ron Paul supporters, and I was chosen an elector at the first Congressional District Caucus, and I was selected against a Ron Paul candidate to be that elector, who happens to be a friend of mine.
Right.
So it's sort of a funny vote going up against my friend.
Right.
But I commend that woman. If she said she can't do it, then you, I mean, you've got to be willing to support the person of your party, that the people who picked you to be an elector. And if she's not in her own conscience going to be able to do that, then I commend her for stepping down and doing the right thing.
It's a pretty, it's really, really inside politics.
Oh, yes.
But it's just sort of interesting. I mean, there have been electors who have not voted for who they were, quote-unquote, supposed to vote for. It's happened few and far between. But it's an interesting world, though.
To quote, yeah, I think Al Gore got on a totally different topic, but he used the phrase, no controlling legal authority, a decade or so ago. And you, that's what you have with the electoral. You make an oath, you promise to support the nominee of your party, but there's no, you don't commit a crime if you go and write your own name in or
right.
vote for somebody else. There's no prison, there's no lawsuit for that.
Right, just really, really interesting about how we make it all up or how we figure it all out. David Stokes, what's going on with this Show Me Institute we need to know about?
Well, we're having a breakfast panel Wednesday morning. Mike Kelly and John Hancock, one Democrat, one Republican political consultant, are going to be talking at Show Me Institute, giving sort of an election preview. That's Wednesday morning, and anybody who is interested in coming can call our office at 454-0647.
That's David Stokes, the Show Me Institute policy analyst, friend of the show. David, we'll see you down the road, my friend.
Thanks, McGraw.
You got it. 8:50, we'll talk to Mike Kelly about Mizzou, Arizona State. That's next in the Big 550 KTRS.